Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem, welcome back to today's Daf Hayomi. Baba Basra Kuf Lamed Ches. We are holding on Kuf Lamed Zayin Amad Beis, four lines from the bottom of the Amad. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. So Rabbi Yehuda quotes Shmuel as follows. Hakoisev Nechasa Le'achar. A fellow writes away his assets, he gives it away to his friend. V'amar Allah E'ef Shibahen. And the intended recipient, let's call him Shimon, says, look, I'm not interested in this building. I have enough of my own. Kana, too bad. He gets it. It's his. Despite his objection. Really? Va'afilu oimed v'tzaveach. So even if he's yelling and screaming, he gets it. And soon the Gemara will explain how and why. That's Shmuel speaking. So you can practically force him to take something against his will. However, Rabbi Yochanan Amar, he disagrees. Rabbi Yochanan says, like Kana, you can't force him to take your gift. Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Mamo. Really, there's no machlekes. They're speaking about different cases. V'loy pligi, there is no dispute here. It all depends on the situation. Kan b'tzaveach mikara. In a case where he objected immediately. He's yelling and screaming. That's Rabbi Yochanan's case. In this case, you can't force him to accept a gift against his will. Rashbam says, it's something which is detrimental to him. Why? Why? Why is a gift detrimental? We have a pasuk in Mishlei, one is meant to avoid taking gifts and having his life depend on benefactors. So, leading an independent, self-sufficient life is certainly commendable and is conducive to arichus yamim. So explains the Maharal, because independence means he has his own source of livelihood. His life is sustainable. It's self-sustainable. So in any case, you can't force him. If he doesn't want it, you can't force him. Khan, however, Shmuel, who indicated otherwise, is speaking what he didn't protest right away. Initially, when he got the gift, he seemed to be okay. He was silent. Later on, he started yelling and screaming. So in this case, he's kinda. And although he's voicing his objection today, too bad, it's yours. Right? You're having a change of heart, a change of mind. Sure, you can get rid of it, provided you give it as a gift, or you make it hefker, but as long as you haven't done that, taken that technical step of unloading this asset, it's still yours. Okay, so when he gives it to him directly, and he's tzeveach mi'ikar, objected immediately, then you can't force him. However, if he was shaysik and then tzeveach, it's his. Omar of Nach Mar Yitzchak, here comes another case. Zika lay aide achar. What if he delivered it to Shimon through a medium, through a messenger, through a shliach, and it's in his presence, in Shimon's presence, who was completely silent at that point, while Reuven gave the asset to him through the medium, through Levi, whether he did a kinyan sudor, or he gave him the shtar. And as soon as Levi was about to hand the shtar to Shimon, the intended recipient, the shasak l'basayv tzavach, then he begins yelling and screaming, I don't really want it. This is sort of a slightly different situation. Rather than Reuven directly giving the matana to Shimon, he gave it through a third person. So here we have a new machlokes. Baru la machlokes Rabban Shimon Gamliel. It's machlokes between him, the Rabban and the Rabban, the Sanya. Hakoyse nechasav la'acher. So Reuven wrote away all the stuff to Shimon. V'hoyu ben avodim. Amongst the assets, you have slaves who have to be taken care of and fed. V'amar Allah, and Shimon says, look, favor, no favor, I don't need it. Yav Shiben, I don't need more slaves. What is the halacha? Im haya rabban sheni kayin, if the new master, meaning Shimon, was a kayin, who typically entitles his slaves to eat terumah, haray elu echlim betrumah. So what is the status of these slaves? They're considered his, owned by a kohen, which allows him to eat truma. Unbelievable. Despite his objection. That's the chacham. Rabban Shimon, Megamliel, Emer, no. Kivisha Omer, Haloi, Efshi, Behen. You heard this fellow objected. He didn't want it. He rejected the gift. Kvar Zoch, Behen, Yershin. So here, Shimon is not deemed the owner. Rather, the Yershim of the Naisin Matan, of the owner, the original owner, they get it. And since they're Yisraelim, they're not Kohanim, then the slaves cannot have Truma. So that's the Machlekes at face value. Do you want to force him to accept a gift? He doesn't want it. Rabbanan say it's his. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel disagrees. Asks the Gemara of Avinimo, we had a question on this Braisa. How does this work? V'tanakama. So you mean that according to the Tanakama, according to the first Shita, even if he's standing there and objecting, how could he force him to take a matana against his will? Amar Rabba. V'tema, some say Rabbi Yechanan. You're right. V'tzevech mi'koroi, if he was yelling and screaming right away, kuli amuli pligi lekoni, all agree he's not koin. On the other hand, shasal was saved tzevach. If you give him a matana directly to him, the shtar, whatever, directly to him, and initially he was silent, seemed to be okay with it, and then Elba Seif Tzavach, he starts voicing his objection. Ukuliam Leplig, all agree, too late, the Kani, he's kind of the Avadim, because we deem it like a change of heart. We view it like he changed course in the middle. So once he took it, once he got it, it's his. Kiplig, the Machlek is an owl price, pertains to a very specific case. Shezikaloya de Acher. There was an intermediary, there was somebody in the middle, a Shliach. So basically, Reuben gave it to Levi to hand it to Shimon. And what did Shimon do? How did he respond? The Shosak, Lopasev Tzavach, initially when the process began, he was silent, he didn't make a fuss. Lopasev Tzavach, but once Levi gives it to Shimon, oh, I don't want it. Question, how do we interpret this response? The Tanakama Sovar mid the Shosak Kaninu. Tanakama says, look, he seemed to be okay with it initially, he's kinda. Vaidika Tzavach, now that he's screaming, Mahadaguda Kahadabe. It's a change of heart, too late. But Rabbi Shimon, Ben Gamliel Savar, whereas he holds, no. His reaction towards the end of the process is indicative of his mindset, of his initial mindset. He doesn't really want it. V'aydeh leit Savach ad hashtas. Why do you wait till now to wage a protest? The Savar, because he figured, why make a fuss before it's pertinent? Kilo imatil yadi, before it got to me, my atzach, why am I yelling? I have plenty of time to yell later. So basically, let's summarize the shtickle gemara. Reuben forces Shimon to take a gift, and Shimon is yelling and screaming. Of course, it doesn't go to him. If it was shasak, and then seif tzavach, too late, it's yours. If it was done through a middleman, and it was shasak or seif tzavach, we have machlekes tanoim. Some say it works, some say it doesn't. Tanu rabbanon, here comes a new brice. Shchivmara, we have a shchivmara. Shamaru says like this, I have three people I want to, you know, give money to. Tanuma Saim Zuz Lepleni, 200 to Ruvain, Shloish Meis Lepleni, $300 to Shimon, Vaba Meis Lepleni, $400 to Levi. So he really wanted them all to have the same level of Zechus. He just couldn't say it all at once. A human being cannot say two words at once. Shama V'Zachar, right? Only Hashem could say. So he didn't mean to give priority to Reuben over Shimon over Levi. He's giving them, you know, sort of an equal claim on the same level. The amounts are different, but in terms of prioritizing, they all get the same level of zechus. So therefore, I mean, we don't say kolakoydim b'shtar zoicha. Not the first one in the list. The first one in the shtar is zoicha first. We don't say that. So basically, there isn't enough to go around. The numbers don't work. He didn't leave so much money behind, so then they all take it, you know, proportionate to their number. Okay, so we got to figure it out, but it basically all have an equal claim, proportionate to their gift amount. And therefore, second point is lefichach yotz olav shtar chayv. Furthermore, suppose after this fellow's passing, a loan document arrives. The bank is owed X amount of money, and there's a lien on the assets. Who must pay? Who must satisfy the Baal Chayv? All together? They all must share this burden? You know, again, relative to their proportion, relative to their share? Or do we say, well, the last guy, the last recipient, so he has to pay first? Do we say it that way? No. L'fichach yotza alav shtar chayv gavya mikula. The bank collects from all of them equally. Again, proportionate to their share of the assets. Aval, however, in a case where he did clearly prioritize, he did it sequentially. Omar, he says, Tnu asayim zuz l'plani. I want $200 to Reuven. V'achrov, whatever's left from the remainder, I want to give some to Shimon. L'plani. V'achrov l'plani. And whatever's remaining behind from Reuven and Shimon, from that leftover, l'plani, give some to Levi. And he stated the amounts. That changes the equation. Here it was done sequential. First priority is Reuven. Then comes Shimon, then comes Levi. So here we say, whoever comes first, gets first. So first we fill Reuven's quota. Any balance to Shimon, any balance to Levi. And furthermore, when it comes to the Baal Chayv, Levi must satisfy the Baal Chayv first, because he's the last one on the list. He's the one that took last available money, right? So he's the bottom of the priority list. The bank collects from Levi first. Ainlo, if there isn't enough to satisfy the bank from Levi's money, so he goes back to Shimon. If there isn't enough there, Ainlo, he goes to Reuven. Tan Rabbanan. Shchiv Marsha Amar Tnu Asayim Zuz L'Plani. B'ni B'chayr. So Shchiv Marsha declares his intention to give $200 to Reuven, his firstborn son, as is befitting for him. Sounds like he's trying to give him a bonus. Well-behaved son, he deserves a bonus. It doesn't come in the place, it doesn't take the place of the Bechayra, of his second portion. He gets the second portion like a Bechayra. On top of that, he gets this bonus because father says, he's deserving, give it to him. He meant to express himself generously. This is a bonus on top of his standard share. But if he had said it differently, give him 200 zuz as his bechira, it was meant to replace the bechira. So now the son has the upper hand, he has a choice. He can either take the 200 zuz, whatever is more, or choose to take the bechira. But it's one or the other, not both together. We have two more examples of this halacha. He declared 200 zuz for his wife, Karo'ilah. So again, it doesn't mean to take the place of the ksuba claim that she has. It's on top of it. It's a bonus. Son, she takes this money. When I tell us a ksubasa on top of the ksuba. Imamar ksubasa, but if he stated this is her ksuba payment, this is in lieu of her ksuba claim, so she can pick and choose. She can decide which way she wants to go. One or the other, but not both together. Yada al yain, she has the upper hand. Ratsasa. She can either take 200 zuz, ratasa, or she can pick to take the ksuba amount, which perhaps is more. Because, you know, although ksuba is 200 zuz, but you can add, right, tesef is ksuba. So ratasa, ksuvasa, takes the ksuba amount instead. Finally, what about repaying a loan? Shchimar sha'amar, Shchimar says, Tnu asayim zuz l'plani baal chayv. You give $200 to my baal chayv, to Reuven who I owe money to, k'roi loy, as is fitting for him. So again, Noitlan was meant as a bonus for being a good, loyal friend. So he accepts it and he collects on his debt as well. So it's on top of that. But if he stated this is his for satisfying his chayv, Noitlan b'chayvay. So then, this is all he can take as per his the debt repayment. Okay, and if it doesn't really suffice to satisfy the entire choiv, I guess then he has to figure out how to do that. But in terms of the matna shchivmara, all he gets, in this case, all he gets is the 200 zuz. Says the Gemara, "Mishum de'ama karoy loy." Let's just focus on this baal choiv. I mean, he's not really, you know, a family member. He's not a wife. He's not a bachur. So here, the Gemara figures, why would we say that he meant to grant him this gift on top of the choiv? Mishum de'ama karoy loy, just because he said the words karoy loy, maybe he just meant satisfy his claim. He deserves this money because of the chayiv, not as a bonus on top of the chayiv. Mishum da'ama karoy lo noitlam noitlas chayiv, because he said karoy lo means to give it him on top of the chayiv. V'duma karoy lo b'chayiv kamim. Maybe all he meant to say is, look, he deserves this money because I own the money. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Lihuna, Rav Huna told me, Hamani Rav Akivi. This halacha follows Rav Akivi's shita. The Diocletian Yisera, who analyzes redundancies, the extra expression, the words karoyloi indicate something on top and beyond. This not as we find in the halacha regarding a fellow who sold his house. V'loyes habor, v'loyes hadus, what's included? Not the pit, not the underground pit, not the cemented pit. Even though he stipulated, I'm selling you the depth and the heights. It's a separate facility, the storage facility, a separate facility. So the owner maintains ownership on that facility. What about access to the facility? Because now it's sitting in the other person's property. He has to go and purchase his access rights to that facility because he basically gave it all away except for the pit itself. So it's sort of landlocked in his buyer's property. That's going good. Rabbi Kiva, dear Rabbi Kiva, who says when you sell ba'ayin yafa moicher, you sell generously, he sold it him all out. And he has to go back and pay for access. The Chacham Oimrim, they disagree, even though you sold him the house, but ba'ayin ro'a moicher, you sell stingily, meaning I sold you what I don't need, but if I still need access to my pit, it's assumed it was not covered by the sale, it's still mine. Ain't tzorich likach leiderach, he need not come back and purchase, you know, his access route to that facility. Now, Umayder Rekivu says that typically you give up that right, but Rekivu would be in full agreement when we find that the seller stipulated some extra wording. He used some extra language, which was typically unnecessary. Why did he use that extra word? To cover himself. Umayder Rekivu Bizman Shamali, when he told him, Chutz me'elu, I'm selling you the house except for the pit, which was an unnecessary stipulation because it was presumed, it's halachically sound. He would keep it anyways, even without saying. So in this case, why did he say it? Apparently he wants to cover himself. He wants to make sure he has not only the storage pit, but the route to the pit as well. So he doesn't have to lay out any money on that. So what do we see from here? Alma, apparently, kivent lo tzorech. Then the case where you don't need to say what you're saying, v'ka'amar, but he insisted on saying it. Apparently, he's trying to add something more than standard, something more than basic. Lutfuyi musa kaasi, trying to add more. Hachanami here as well, in our case, with the Shchivmara, who says, give 200 zuz to Mabal Chayv Karo'i Loi. Those extra words, Kivin Loi Tzarech, which was unnecessary, become and he said it. Lutfuyi musa kaasi, trying to add more to what's, you know, understood otherwise. He meant it as a bonus. Tanu Rabbanan, Shchivmara, Sha'amar mana yeshli etzel plaini. Shchivmara gets up and says, you know, I have $100 by Reuven, meaning he owes me money. Now there were Edom there. Can they record this? Can they put it down in a document? Edom Kaisman, they could sit down and write it. They could say, look, Shchivmara informed us about this debt that's owed to him. Afal b'she'en makirin, even though they have no clue. If it's true, they don't even know who this guy is. Who the, you know, purported borrower is. They're just recording words that was stated in their presence. And therefore, lefichach shugayva. So, since the Edom are allowed to record this, even though they have no independent confirmation about the authenticity of the facts or the story, So we can't really rely on this document as a bona fide representation of the truth. So now when the Yerush wants to collect based on this document, he has to prove his case. You can't just come in with the shtar and say, look, I have a shtar. Right? The shtar on its own is not going to supply that confirmation. No, they disagree. The Edom would only record this if they had first-hand knowledge of this story. So it can be relied on as a reliable depiction of events. And therefore, so when the fellow wants to collect based on the shtar, he need not bring a dependent proof, but the shtar itself provides that proof. And the Gemara explains later that, you know, according to the Meir, according to the Rabbanon, the reason why we insist that the Edom are familiar with the facts firsthand before they record it, because there's something called a Bezdin Toyin. We're concerned that perhaps down the road, this Shtar will end up in a Bezdin who aren't the greatest experts, aren't the world's, you know, biggest authorities. And they might mistakenly, you know, they take a look at the Shtar, oh, Edom, done deal. Not realizing that the Edom are simply recording a narration that took place in their presence without independently verifying the facts. Therefore, say to Chacham, don't proceed, don't do this type of thing unless you know for sure what's going on, unless you can independently verify the facts. Having said that, the shtar now has validity and can be used to collect on. So that's the machlekes. Rameir says it could have just been written informally. Chacham say a shtar is something reliable. Amar Nachman, Amar Lihuna. So Huna told me that the names are meant to be reversed. There's another version of this machlekes, the same equation but different names. Tana, we learned in the Brisa, Ramei is the one who says they can't record it unless they know. They could. And truthfully, Ramei's reason for preventing them from recording it is, like we explained before, we're concerned about confusion down the road. Elamashim Bezdin Toyim, concerned about a Bezdin who might mistakenly take it as fact. Amar Avdimi Menardo. Hilchasa, so what's the conclusion? Ain Choshish in the Bezdin Toyim. We're not concerned about the Bezdin Toyim. So, we allow ourselves to record this narrative without verifying the facts, because the Bezdin down the road will surely analyze the wording of the shtar, which is simply stating that they heard a story and they won't really act upon it. Asks the Gemara, "Umayishna be the Rava?" So here we're not concerned about confusion, but Rava tells us, "Dama Rava, ein cholzin el mkin makirin." No, we have to have independent verification before we proceed. For instance, if a woman is about to do chalitza to the brother-in-law, right? She's a yivama, she needs to do chalitza. The bezdin will not proceed, will not apply chalitza unless they can personally identify this is the yavam, this is the yivama, right? Why? Because if they just do it without investigating the facts, they just give her a shtar, right, that she did chalitza, she'll take that shtar to the other bezdin. Oh, done deal. They'll never question the process. They'll assume, right, it was legitimate. Vein memanin elam ken makirin. Likewise, an underage wife, a ketana, can just walk away, reject her husband. That's the halacha of miyum. Right, if she got married through her family, not her father, but her family married her off, she can just reject, walk away. So again, the bezdin will not involve themselves in this process and issue a document to this effect unless they know who we're talking about. They could personally identify the parties involved. Right? So again, we're talking about the bezdin being there during the chalitza, the bezdin officiating the miyun. They must know the parties. Lefichach. And therefore, as a result of this requirement, koisvin get chalitza, we get miyun. So let's say the Edom are there watching this process, they can actually record, look, we were there when there was a Mian, we were there when there was a Chalitza, because even though they don't necessarily know the parties involved, but certainly the Bezdin wouldn't have gotten involved without knowing firsthand what's going on. My time, why do we require Bezdin personally identify the parties? Because we're concerned that this might lead to a misunderstanding, that the Bezdin down the road we'll get wind of the fact that this Bezin here was involved. Oh, if they were involved, apparently it's legitimate. Not knowing that the first Bezin had no clue who these parties were. So to preempt that situation, we required that the initial Bezin have first-hand knowledge of the parties involved. And how does this work with Rava? With the conclusion of the Gemara before, that the Aloch is, we're not chayshish for Bezin Tov, we're not concerned about this type of confusion. So that's the more big difference. Here we're talking about a Bezin. So of course the second Bezin will feel confident relying on the first Bezin. A Bezin is a recognized authority. Certainly they wouldn't have done it without confirming all the facts. So here we have to be careful. Lest we come to mislead the second Bezin. Bezdina. So one Bezin following the other, Loidaiki, they're not really going to question the first Bezin's process. So we have to ensure that the first Bezin follows the rules. But Bezdina Basar Edim Daiki. However, in the case of the Yeshivara, suppose the document which the Edim are recording today, simply containing the narrative of the Shchivara, saying a story, if that shtar we present to the next Bezin, of course they're going to question it. Who says it's legitimate? Who says it's real? So here we're not concerned about a Bezin Toin, and therefore we allow the Edim to write it, but you have to be careful. You can't really use the shtar unless you independently confirm the facts and the identities of the parties involved. Okay, so in a nutshell, we had a fellow forcing a gift upon his friend. If there's immediate objection, tzavach mi'ikara, you can't force him. If there's a shasak and then tzavach, it works. Through a shliach, here we say even shasak will save tzavach, we have a machlekes. Some say it's too late, some say no. There's a reason why he delayed his protest, thinking that, look, I wait to make a fuss when I get it. So really, he didn't mean to accept it at all. We have a Shchivara who promised some money to various individuals. We have two variations of this halacha. We have a sort of a simultaneous gift to all equally, or a sequential gift. We have the Shoinais of Karoiloi, how that works. We have the halacha regarding verifying the parties involved and the requirement to independently verify the details. The halacha is that if it's a Bezin involved, they have to do so, but if there's Edim just recording a narrative, there's no concern because later on we'll have to investigate regardless. All the best to you and much Hatzlacha.